Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht, with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Click, click.
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. On a Friday, I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months. This is the best time, guys. Whatever kind of team that you're following, if you're following a playoff team, you're going to get great articles. You're following a lottery team. Sam Vecenie just dropped a new mock draft. It's time. Athletic.com, theathletic.com/NBA show. $1 a month. It's just basically free. You won't even notice it. You won't even notice it coming out of your account for 6 months. So go do that. With me, as always, is my good friend Alex Spears. And Alex, tell me what happened in the NBA this week.
Well, Andrew, it all started last Friday night with a 134-122 Bulls win over the Minnesota Timberwolves, a game in which DeMar DeRozan scored 35 points. Now, on its own, 35 points is nice. But you know what's even nicer? Scoring 35 or more points while shooting 50% from the field for six consecutive games. A stat you didn't even know existed or cared about before this week, but something that only Wilt Chamberlain and DeMar DeRozan have accomplished.
That's right.
Seems certain now that DeRozan will be this year's, he's not going to win it, but we got to talk about it, MVP. On Saturday, the Memphis Grizzlies beat the Hornets 125-118. Just another win for the 41-19 Grizz, who have won 9 of their last 11. The only two losses coming at Philadelphia and to the championship favorite Portland Trailblazers. The Grizzlies now sit only 1.5 games back of the Warriors for the 2 seed. On Sunday, we only had 2 games because of the Super Bowl, and because I'll mention the Celtics later, why not check in on the Timberwolves, who beat the Pacers 129-120. They follow this up with a home win against the Hornets, a game in which Wolves fans responded to D'Angelo Russell's comments about the Wolves, quote, quiet-ass fans, by creating a raucous atmosphere in the Target Center for the Wolves' 7th straight home win. However, that home streak would be broken later in the week by the Raps. On Monday, the Portland Trailblazers, who you may remember from the trade deadline as the team that traded away a bunch of NBA players for mostly cap room and picks in an obvious attempt to tank the rest of the season, beat the Giannis-less Bucks 122-107. Then they went on the road to Memphis later in the week and beat the Grizzlies 123-119. That is 4 wins in a row heading into the All-Star break. Prior to the streak, this team had lost 8 of 9. Yeah. What the hell is going on?
We're going to talk about it here in just a minute. In just a minute, we're going to talk about it.
Well, Andrew, I live in Portland, and I literally can't watch the game because of RSN issues, so I don't know what's happening. Somebody, please tell me. On Tuesday, the turnaround Celtics After making what was either the greatest trade ever or the worst trade ever, depending on which Celtics blog post you're reading, continued their march to the playoffs with a 48-point demolition of the Sixers, winning 135-87. After the game, 538's playoff predictor had Boston with the best odds of winning the championship. How did they respond? Losing to the Pistons by one. Every podcaster was ready to do their Celtics segment, talk about the amazing 10-game winning streak, and then they lose to the Pistons. Now, some, like Zach Lowe, they plowed ahead, did a whole episode about them. Hey, but not me. You lose to the Pistons, you get out of here. Scram! On Wednesday, there's honestly almost too much to talk about. It was
there's
a
so
beautiful
much.
Night of basketball. Yeah. We had the Knicks losing their third straight, blowing a 20-point lead, this time to a skeleton Nets team in MSG. We had Jokic throwing another well-timed, perfect pass to a wide-open shooter to win a game against the Warriors. We had LeBron scoring 15 in the fourth to bring the Lakers all the way back to beat the Jazz. Even our own Wheel of Fandom team, the Houston Rockets, put up a fight in Phoenix, only losing by three to the best team in the league. And finally, on Thursday, these playoffs are going to be so good, Andrew. It was a playoff-like atmosphere in Milwaukee as the Bucks took on the Sixers behind a 42-14-5 effort from Joel Embiid. The Sixers won a close 123-120 contest over the Bucks. The Sixers are now 35-23, third in the East, only 2.5 games out of first, and we still haven't even seen James Harden. What a week it was, Andrew.
You got a favorite in the East? Going into this playoff stretch?
No, of course not.
You going to name one for me?
Nope.
No?
Nope. Too hard.
I know. I'm scared. I'm scared to do it. I want to talk about this Blazers team. The Blazers have been the feel-good story since the trade deadline. They've won four in a row, as you mentioned, including wins against Milwaukee and Memphis, and just been an absolute joy to watch. Anthony Simons roasted Drew Holiday on Valentine's Day in Milwaukee, and then two nights later, poor Tyus Jones just got switched on to Ant over and over again as they beat the Grizzlies in Memphis, which has only happened 9 other times this season. Since the trade deadline out, the Blazers are 9th in offense, 10th in defense, and 7th in net rating, which is just absurd. They're a plus 7.2. And you have to credit Chauncey Billups, who has had maybe one of the more uninspired rosters this entire season. I saw them in person a few weeks ago, and I hadn't seen a team play like that or just like flat out not respond to their coach at all throughout an entire game, playing against the Oklahoma City Thunder, mind you, like a very like undermanned Oklahoma City Thunder team. They could not beat them. But this over this past week, Cronin brought in Josh Hart, who has been great for them. And the thing with Hart is that Hart wants more of a role. Like, he doesn't want to be a guy that sits in the corner and hits corner threes and plays defense. Like, he wants more of the offense, and he's gotten that in these few games with the Blazers. Justice Winslow, who I'm not ready to believe in yet. I don't know if you saw the quotes from Justice Winslow, that he's found his home. It's been four games, and he's like, this is it. I'm a little skeptical of that. I'd be very leery of that if I were Blazers fans, because it's like, wait a minute, you want to be here forever now? But that's cool. Like, it's cool. It's fun. And Anthony Simons has blown up. He's averaging 30 points during this stretch. Josh Hart is 24 points, shooting 52% from three. Nurkic is back up over 20 points per game in this stretch. It's been really fun. And Anthony Simons has been a budding star all season. There's been no question about that. Since Lillard has been out since the beginning of January, he's averaging 23 points per game on 46, 41, 85 shooting splits. Like, this is like a real like all-star type of player. He's been very, very good. And Al, we talked about this some. The Blazers currently sit at 10th in the West, and they have the 29th ranked strength of schedule for the rest of the season. From March 12th to April 7th, which is 15 games, it's almost a month of basketball, they play two teams that are in the playoff or play-in mix, and it's the Hawks and the Nets. Everybody else during that stretch is a lottery team. And making the play-in, it would be fun. It would be really fun, especially for a team that has no expectations. It's even more fun. However, if the Blazers do make the play-in, and God forbid the playoffs, they would be missing a huge opportunity. Their own pick is currently lottery protected to the Chicago Bulls. And if they somehow, by the grace of God, make the playoffs, they lose that pick. Like, it's just poof, gone. And like everything Joe Cronin worked for at the trade deadline is just gone, just magically. You know, from there, they would be hoping for the Pelicans to fall between 5 and 14 in the lottery. And currently, they sit at 7th in the reverse standings. And maybe that pick looks a little bit better, but then you start to play with fire a little bit because that pick is top 4 protected. So if that pick suddenly jumps, like suddenly, like it's not a likely scenario, but there is a scenario where both picks just poof are gone. And that's kind of scary to me.
Yeah, it's a scenario that like 2 weeks ago or a week ago, like you don't even consider it really. And it's still like way outside chance, but you can at least imagine it. And that's what's scary, because if that pick doesn't convey, you get a future Milwaukee pick, which is obviously not the same.
Right. It's a very unlikely scenario. That's a doomsday scenario. More likely, though. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Wait, before you go on, I was going to say, one silver lining, if they did somehow make the playoffs and lost that pick, they would get out from under that 8-year protection that Neil Olshey put on that pick, would That's actually true. Be able to trade future picks now. It'd be a silver lining.
That's the old, yeah. You'd be celebrating, wouldn't you, Blazers fans, if that happens? Oh, man. And honestly, whenever they pulled all these levers at the trade deadline, you were hoping, you have dreams of a top 4 pick, like maybe having like the 3rd or 4th pick, and then potentially having like the 7th, 8th, or 9th pick in the draft. And then being able to pick two guys, or maybe like take both of those and trade for the first pick if they really like that guy, or take both of those picks and trade for somebody that's on the open market. You know, perhaps like and Bradley Beal's not like a great fit, but like a player of that caliber comes on the market. Well, now you have more ammunition to go get them and to make your team better. Because, you know, I would just worry about the Blazers going into this thinking that they could get somebody in free agency. Like, I think it's going to be via trade. And to me, their own first-round pick should have been their most valuable asset. And while it's great that Simons has taken off and Hart and Winslow and Nurkic are playing some of the best basketball of their careers, there's got to be a little dissonance with the fan base. And I know most people are excited. I've read a lot of stuff. I've read a lot of blogs. I've listened to a lot of podcasts. But you need high-level talent around Dame and Ant. And I just, again, wouldn't count on free agency if I'm Portland. And I really do believe that their best path forward is trying to control their own lottery pick, which, to Cronin's credit, he tried to do that at the deadline, but right now, Alex, it is backfiring in like the most fun and likable way possible.
Yeah, and for Blazers fans, like you talked about what the Blazers looked like pre-deadline. Like, that team was not fun to watch. And like reading Portland blogs, reading or listening to Portland podcasts early in the season, like they were just getting sick of watching this team. So there's like this release happening right now because it's actually a fun team to root for. They're playing hard. They're playing the style of basketball that Chauncey Billups wants to play. He actually has some guys in place that make sense. The thing I'm starting to wonder is Dame had his surgery a while ago. Yep. He said that he could come back, but it would depend on where the team was. I don't know if that was just something he said, and maybe the plan all along was just to sit out the rest of the season. But if they continue winning, is there a point where it not only makes sense for Dame, but it also makes sense for Portland? Because they haven't seen really Dame and Anfernee Simons as the two lead guards on this team for any extended period of time. And going into this summer, where you're going to be offering Anfernee Simons a huge contract, maybe Dame's getting an extension. If like you're giving up on the tank idea, wouldn't it be nice to see those two guys for these last 20 games or whatever it ends up being play together and see how it works? Just so you know what you have, instead of having to wait all the way until next season to then start experimenting with those two guys as your lead guards.
Yeah, and they could find out maybe they get halfway through that stretch that I mentioned in March, and they're like a firm playing team. You know, we get to March 23rd again, and they beat the Spurs that night. And it's like, yeah, the Blazers look like they're going to be a playing team. Well, you get, what is it, like 10 games or so for Dame to kind of ramp up. And then they make the playoffs. And then potentially the doomsday, both picks, poof, poof scenario happens. Like, who knows?
And at the same time, like, if Dame came back, like, if they really did, like, keep winning and Dame came back, like, it would, like, the Moda Center would be insane. Like, people would be going crazy.
It would be insane. It would be very fun for today. Very, very fun.
Yes. When you got to July, you would then, like, wake up and have, like, a hangover potentially from it and be like, right. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do now?
We just lost in round one again for the, for like the seventh time in 8 years. Like, oh no.
But I will say one thing I'm starting to come around on is this idea that, like, Dame and Ant as a defensive backcourt, I'm not as worried about anymore. Sure. Because I look at guys like Josh Hart, I look at guys like Justice Winslow, like those guys start to make sense. And I was going back, the 2017-18 Blazers, they were sixth in defense. And that was with playing Dame and CJ 36 minutes a night. And that was with Nurk. The only difference was they had guys like Al-Farouq Aminu and like Mo Harkless, Ed Davis. That was like peak Ed Davis NBA smart guy era.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, oh, yeah. We have seen a decent defense with Dame and CJ, so I could imagine it working with Dame and Ant if you got more of these like long rangey guys. So I don't know. I'm open to it, but this like this run, I don't know what to say anymore. Like I'm just kind of blown. The first three wins, I was like, okay, like it's the Lakers, like whatever. But then when they beat the Grizz,
I know,
I was like this is different in Memphis.
In Memphis, I felt the same way because it was like there's no Giannis, and like I know that Drew Holiday, Middleton, like still like cool win, good job, you like pat him on the head, way to go. But then when they beat the Grizzlies, I'm like, okay, like maybe there's something really going on here, and that's why I wanted to talk about him.
Well, my most interesting thing this week, Andrew, was the New York Knicks. And the kind of depressing space they inhabit right now between the playoffs and tanking, a space that has only gotten more depressing, more existential with the addition of the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
The Knicks had a week from hell, a week that was wonderfully captured by the Knicks Film Room post-game podcast with Jonathan Macri, which I listened to all week, former guest of the show. He's great. The Knicks lost to the post-deadline Blazers, the Thunder without SGA and Dort, and the Nets without KD, Simmons, or Kyrie. Two of those losses featuring a blown 20-point lead. They are now 25-34, 3.5 games out of 10th in the East. And watching it all unfold this week, it was hard for me not to jump on the hashtag fire Tibbs bandwagon. Being somewhat of an emotional fan myself and someone who's never been a particularly big fan of Tibbs, the call to fire Tibbs spoke to me at a deep level, Andrew. It was the sort of week, and I think every fan has experienced this at some point, where you just come to the conclusion, well, they have to do something, right? Like, we're not just going to keep doing this, are we? And the most obvious option for many would be to fire Tibbs. And listen, there are legitimate reasons to consider that. It's not just fans being fickle. Like, Tibbs continues to trot out the same awful starting lineup that is currently the fourth most played lineup in the league, despite having a minus 13.8 net rating. And that lineup would probably be the third most played lineup right now if Tibbs had not decided to leave starter RJ Barrett in late during a 17-point loss to the Nuggets when he injured his ankle with 25 seconds left, an injury that's caused him to miss the last four games. Then there's the end-of-game timeout in the game against OKC, which Tibbs called to challenge a play despite not having a challenge left, leading to the Knicks being unable to advance the ball in the closing seconds of that loss. There's also the embarrassing loss to the crosstown Nets at home with Brooklyn Chance raining down at MSG. And there's the refusal to play some of the younger guys on the Knicks more minutes when there's no obvious answers coming from his vets. The point is, there is a compelling case to be made for firing Tibbs. I'm not denying that. In fact, the Athletic's own Mo Dekeel had an article in Bleacher Report on Thursday laying out the case against Tibbs. But I think it's worth asking, what did we really expect? Jonathan Macri made this point on Knicks Film Room, and I agree. This is Tibbs. Like, he's the same guy he's always been. Nothing he is doing this season, outside of the occasional brain fart like we saw against OKC, should really be that much of a surprise. You hired Tibbs, you got Tibbs. This is Tibbs. The reaction this week reminds me of the reaction of to Russell Westbrook this season in many ways. Always expecting he's going to change. Always saying if he can just do this one thing differently. Always
just
somehow
setting screens. Set some screens. Like Russell Westbrook is somehow going to screen and roll. Sure. Okay.
Like we're always somehow surprised at the end of the day that these guys are still the same stubborn guy they've always been.
Yeah.
But you keep talking yourself into it because you know there's a good coach or good player in there that should be able to work regardless of the situation. But is it really Tom Thibodeau's fault that he predictably got a team to overachieve, especially defensively, in his first season, and now things are coming back to earth, and arguably through the earth, to be fair? Should we be surprised that the defense has fallen off when his front office's biggest offseason acquisitions were a new front court feature, or new backcourt featuring Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier? Should we be surprised that a Tom Thibodeau offense is underwhelming as he once again relies on the heroics of one star player? Should we be surprised that Julius Randle isn't going to be a perennial all-NBA player for the rest of his career after breaking out at age 26? Should we be surprised that Tibbs isn't playing Obi Toppin more when he plays the same position as Julius Randle, knowing that Tibbs has always played his main guys huge minutes? Like I said earlier, there's legitimate arguments against Tibbs. But there's a lot else going on with the Knicks, and a lot of the issues seem predictable in the context of Tibbs' coaching career. And the reason I find all this so interesting is not just because it's the Knicks or just because it's Tibbs. I think it's interesting because the entire pitch of this new Knicks regime was establishing a culture. Doing it the right way, we're going to build smartly, we're not going to rush into anything like Knicks teams of the past, all with the goal of regaining respect as a franchise so that the next time a free agent that matters becomes available, the Knicks can finally cash in on the natural advantage we've been always assumed they had, even though there's been very little evidence for it. And so even if I didn't love the Tibbs hire initially, it made sense in the context of that plan. And how could you not buy into the plan after watching this team last season? It felt like a team and a franchise that at the very least had established a culture, established an identity. But now we're here, a year and a half into the Tibbs experience, when it's starting to feel kind of like the old Knicks. We got the report this week from Ian Begley that William Wesley, the Knicks VP of basketball, has been citing Tibbs as a significant factor in the Knicks' struggles when he's talking to James Dolan. Begley also reported that Tibbs was angry after the Knicks didn't make any deals on deadline day, believing that the roster needed an upgrade. We also had the weird Cam Reddish situation where they give up a pick for him, but then Tibbs doesn't really play him, which actually may be justified because he's been really bad when he's played. But then also he might have been available again at the deadline. Now, most of this stuff is probably normal for a struggling team, but unlike other struggling teams, the Knicks are carrying decades of futility with them and a desperate need to break that cycle and establish something real. And so any decision the Knicks make right now takes on extra weight, extra pressure, because regardless of what they decide, they have to get it right. Because if they don't, all that goodwill you've built up over the past year just goes away, and it would be hard not to feel like we're right back where we were a couple seasons ago. So this isn't really an argument for or against firing Tibbs. It's more of an acknowledgement from me, an emotional fan who is impatient with my own team, that firing Tibbs doesn't really solve anything for the Knicks without a clear plan for what's next. Now, if they came out, they fired Tibbs, and they hired someone like Kenny Atkinson, and they said, we want to develop these young guys. We want to invest in Cam Reddish, Emmanuel Quickley, Obi Toppin, RJ Barrett, Quentin Grimes. We want to develop a Knicks team from the ground up. Great. I feel like we've been talking about that approach with the Knicks for decades, but hey, if they committed to that, I'm in, and I bet a lot of Knicks fans would be in too. But if the goal is pushing for the playoffs with this roster, I am just not convinced that Tibbs is the main problem. Does anyone really believe that this Knicks roster is a playoff team in this Eastern Conference? As the Hawks are learning this year, this isn't the same old Eastern Conference. Things have changed. Go look at the standings. Like, team after team, this conference is stacked. And I think the dramatic improvement of this conference combined with natural regression of an overachieving Knicks team has brought us to this point. So if you think bringing in a new coach is changing that reality, I think you're going to end up being disappointed. And so it doesn't mean like I'm against firing him, but you have to have a plan beyond, we just need a new voice. There has to be something beyond that than like we've just gotten tired of Tibbs.
The plan isn't Alec Burks point guard?
Again, there's things... legitimate criticisms of Tom Thibodeau. I get it.
Yeah. No, I mean, the only saving grace is that they still have their picks, right? Like, that's
yes,
the...
they have not made, like, the leverage of the future trade,
yeah,
which is great. Another sign, like, even they obviously they made decisions this past offseason that haven't worked out. Evan Fournier one being chief among them.
Yeah.
But they haven't made, like, the critical, like, multi-year mistake yet that, like, really mm-hmm. is going to cripple you. So, yeah, I do think they're still in okay shape. And I even like some of their young guys. Like, we were watching the Thunder game. Quentin Grimes played 40 minutes. Like, he looked yeah. solid.
Yeah, he's
but
cool.
You go through this Eastern Conference, like Miami, Chicago, Philly, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Boston, Toronto, Brooklyn. That's eight teams. Like, look at the Knicks roster. Who are they jumping in the near future?
They're not. That's why I think, that's why I'm saying, like, it's good that they have their picks, because it's a good time to just sit back, develop your guys. And that's where you would make the case, like, fire Tibbs, bring in a coach that will develop these guys.
Right.
Develop your guys, be opportunistic, and if Zion Williamson, like, actually becomes available or something like that happens, you can be ready. Because you're right, with this current construction where you're just hoping that Alec Burks can deliver you W's, it's just like no. Like, not, like you said, not in this Eastern Conference.
Yeah, Derrick Rose getting hurt shouldn't matter this much.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. Derrick Rose in 2022 should not be the linchpin of
right.
your franchise. It's so crazy. All right, Al, we're going to talk about another team that's counting on draft picks. It's the Houston Rockets, right after this quick break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah. All right, Andrew, it is time for the Wheel of Fandom, where each week we spin a digital wheel. It lands on a random NBA team, and we become fans of that team for the next week. This past week, the Wheel of Fandom landed on the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are currently 15-43, going 0-3 this week. It sounds bad. And some of it was, but let's give credit to the Rockets for a very entertaining game against the Phoenix Suns on Wednesday that they only lost by 3. But more importantly for me, it was the third game this season where Alperen Şengün played more than 28 minutes, which I count as a victory. Andrew, if our favorite team is the Rockets, who is our guest?
We've got Alican Bajani from The Athletic. You can find him on Twitter at Rockets_insider. Alican, how's it going, man?
Hey guys, nice to be with you.
So let's start with last week, the trade deadline. There had been a lot of rumors about Houston in the run-up to the deadline, including that Houston already had multiple offers of a first-round pick for Eric Gordon. How surprised were you that Houston largely stood pat at the deadline outside of getting off of Daniel Theis's money?
Yeah, I actually was not as surprised as a lot of Rockets fans were that the team did not move on from Eric Gordon. Eric's a big part of what they're trying to build in terms of a culture and just a foundation, offensively, defensively, just within the organization, kind of a fresh new start. And he's had conversations with both Rafael Stone and Steven Salas on his role, and he really enjoys it in Houston. I think when you look at Eric Gordon, he's such an influential figure in the development of guys like Jalen Green, Josh Christopher, and Alperen Şengün. Alp and Eric are very close. And just, you know, when I look at it from a outside of the court type of perspective, I don't think they necessarily had, they were necessarily forced to really make a move at this trade deadline I do think it's more likely, I said this before the season two, it's more likely he gets moved into the draft when you know what the draft picks are, you know which teams are picking where, and it's easier for you to be able to kind of visualize what a deal would look like. And then he also goes into an expiring deal because he'll have one more year left in his contract. So all in all, yes, it would have been good for Eric to join a contender. Yes, it would have been good for the Rockets to potentially bring in an asset, but ultimately they weren't pressured into making a move, and maybe you'll probably revisit that when you go into the offseason.
So the one deal they did make was to bring in Enes Freedom and Dennis Schroeder, both of whom most expected at the time would be waived. Enes is gone, but Dennis is not just staying in Houston, but he appears to be part of the team's plan for at least the rest of this season. This has caused some angst among some in the Rockets fan base who feel the team already wasn't emphasizing their young players enough. We'll get into some of the individual rookies, but what is your general opinion on how Houston has handled the development of its young players this season?
Man, it's a great question. I think at the end of the day, you want to look at development. You want to look at growth. Have you seen growth from their players? Besides Garuba, and that's a special case because of his injury, I think you can make the argument that each of their three players has developed tremendously from where they were in the summer league. Şengün has grown leaps and bounds defensively. He's been much better defensively than I would have thought he would be after summer league. Offensively, he's learning how to play the position, what he needs to do as a center and as a big. And the Rockets want to give him the ball. It's not like they don't want to give him the ball and be a facilitator. They want to, but he has to be able to learn and grow and play alongside others. And I think that just comes with time. When it comes to Jalen, he is leaps and bounds better also, especially defensively. I think he's using his size and his frame to his advantage. He's been really good coming off of screens, kind of just escaping those screens from bigs and just kind of staying with shooters on spot up opportunities. Isolation wise is one of his strengths. And for a team like the Rockets likes to switch as much as they do, it's good to kind of see him grow there. Offensively, he's finishing much better. He's shooting better than 45-50% from the field the last, 20 or so games. He's in there about 10 or 15 times. So he's shooting better too. And lastly, Josh Christopher, he's showing himself to be a great off guard type of player. Comparisons have been made to Aaron Gordon or Drew Holiday in the past. I think we need to slow our roll there, when we compare a player like that to those type of caliber players, but he's been great. I think ultimately you've seen development, you've seen growth. I think the next step is let them grow into their bodies more. Hopefully you see something where they've learned the foundational pieces of playing the NBA. And that's not just understanding the game speed, but it's also learning technique, right? Like you have to be able to play defensive technique properly. You have to be able to know the spots you're going to be successful offensively. I think that's where I'm looking forward to seeing them grow. We all know they have the skill, but can they, take advantage of learning the technique and be able to, implement that into their game so they can take that next step?
So let me ask you though, because with Şengün, like we saw that game against the Suns. He has 19, 14, 3, 2 steals, a block, 3 threes against DeAndre Ayton. Like it was an awesome game. Then tonight against the Clippers, Christian Wood comes back. He had an illness, so he was out for that Phoenix game. And Şengün gets slotted back into, 14, 15 minutes a night. And like, I get what you're saying about, they need to be developing, they need to be learning these defensive habits. But you look at someone like Christian Wood, like, they give up 140 points. His defense isn't impressive. Like, it feels like he's being held to a different standard than some of these rookies who are probably more likely to be the future of Houston's team.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you on that, especially when you were clearly, there was a point where they were on that winning streak and they were kind of winning. They were kind of hovering around to a point where, do you stay in contention for a play-in spot? I mean, this is honestly you have to consider these things. But now that they're so far away from that, and the fact that you're heading into the second half of the season when you're just trying to get better and, put on some good tape, get some lineup data and go into next year, I'm in agreement with you. You would like to see Şengün play more. As a starter, and I just reference this not because of the fact that he's starting, but just the reference of the minutes he gets as a starter, right? You obviously play more minutes as a starter. He averages, I think it's around 10 points a game, almost 8 rebounds a game, almost 4 assists per game. He averages more playing time as a starter as it is. And so obviously you want to see him play more. He's clearly going to be starting for you in the future. But you know, I'll say this, Alex, it feels like that they are protecting him a little bit. They like to have him come play with the second unit, allow him to kind of grow his NBA foundation with that second unit, kind of playing against opposing backup bigs versus actual starting bigs. And we've seen him do well. I can reference that Giannis game when they played Milwaukee in Houston a few months back, where he went at Giannis for a few possessions to start the fourth quarter and held his own, offensively and defensively. So the spark is there. You can see the talent, the skill. I just think Rockets fans just want to see more of that. I think a lot of people want to see more of that because how good he is.
Yeah, for sure. So another Şengün question that I have is, you know, Wood is the nominal starter right now, but looking ahead to this draft, if they do get a top pick, a lot of bigs are at the top of this draft. Like, do you already have a big in mind that you think would be a really good fit with Şengün as kind of like the front court of the future?
Man, you know, I've started doing my digging, obviously, now that we're probably heading towards the Rockets being a bottom three team. I've started doing some digging. I think all three of those bigs that you're referencing have skills that would, depending on what your direction you're going with as a team, it could kind of change the way you approach it. I will say the Rockets have always been a franchise, and Rafael Stone is still here. A lot of the front office is still here from the Maury days. They've been a front office that goes for talent over fit for the most part, because they believe that talent can figure it out. They can play well together. And so for me, based off of that, it's just going to be really about who they feel has the highest ceiling. I think that could probably be, you can make the case for Banchero and Holmgren to both have the higher ceilings. I really do like Jabari Smith, though. I think that he can be such a great five man in this league when you're trying to have a good solid floor, and also just the ability to have some sort of higher ceiling that you can take the skills he has as a stretch big and the ability to knock down with good mechanics, and you can make that into something. And oh, by the way, he's great defensively, and the Rockets clearly need a good paint presence as well, especially with some of the concerns they have with their perimeter defenders at the guard position. So I really like Jabari Smith. I think he would be solid here as well, but you know, let's see what happens. It's really going to depend on kind of what the Rockets' focus is in terms of their game plan for how they want to manage their roster moving forward.
So let's shift to Jalen Green, who was the number two pick. He'll be in the dunk contest this weekend. Should be really fun to see him there. He's kind of had an up and down season, really kind of compared to the rest of the guys that were drafted in like the top like 7, 8. He's probably been the guy that's shown the least amount of flashes, but he has had some flashes. And as somebody that's watched him every night and not just check the box scores, what have you noticed about his game that might surprise some people?
He is, I think when his body catches up to where his mind is, you're going to see a lot more of those plays that you're seeing guys like Cade make, just those playmaking kind of abilities. I think he will get to a point where he can be a good, solid secondary and potentially maybe primary ball handler and playmaker for a team. He makes reads that you're like, you know what? I see what you're doing. I see the kind of pass you're trying to make. I see how you're using your eyes. I see what you're doing. But physically, the pass either gets broken up just because of the lack of spacing, the Rockets starting lineup has, even with Wood starting, just the lack of spacing that exists, or just the funky lineups that they have to throw out there. Sometimes those passes get broken up or it's a turnover, but you see him going through that process of, I'm trying to make a play for my teammates. And oh, by the way, if that's not there, I know I can use my quick first step and get to the rim. So that processing is getting there for me. And I think that's been the biggest takeaway, especially when he was going through that shooting slump. And now he's making shots, and now you're actually seeing, hey, you know, I'm making shots. Defenses are respecting me a lot more at the perimeter. Let me take advantage of them. Let me get inside the paint. Let me find some dump off passes to the others. He's, I would say right now, his best passing ability comes from whenever he's inside the paint, because that can be a quick dump off. But where I would like to see him get better is his cross court passes. Mentally, he's there. He knows that he can make those passes, and he tries to. But once he gets into his size and his body, and that will come with great work this offseason, those passes will be on target for him to find his teammates, especially when they continue to add more shooters this offseason.
You mentioned the potential for playmaking in the future. So right now, he was out the last couple games, but Kevin Porter Jr. has kind of been given the keys to this offense this season. They're trying him out as a full-time point guard. What do you think about that experiment so far? Like, are you confident in KPJ as a point guard of the future for the Rockets and his fit with Jalen Green in the backcourt?
You know, I was discussing this with some other media members. I like the comparison to DeJounte Murray. Not to say this current DeJounte Murray that's a all-star and, you know, budding superstar, but DeJounte Murray in terms of the progress and potential that he went on and that the steps he took to develop over time to get to where he is today. They have very similar body sizes. Obviously, DeJounte's arms and hands are much longer than KPJ's, but just in terms of the way they play, the style, the speed, the way they can kind of slow down and pick up tempo, that kind of simultaneous transition they have, it's very similar to me. You know, KPJ's grown up as a lot as a shooter. He's shooting almost close to the 38 to 40% now over the last few months, which has really brought up his three-point percentage. He's been the Rockets' best clutch player. I mean, he's doing a lot of great things. And for me, when I'm looking at what KPJ is as a point guard, I have to remind myself of a few things. Number one, it's not even been a full calendar year yet since he got the reins of becoming a point guard. He was point guard for the G League team, the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, in the G League bubble last year, came over to the Rockets after the trade deadline and all-star break, and has basically been the starting point guard ever since. He's had some injuries here and there, so you can't even say he's played a full calendar year as a point guard, but the leaps and bounds he's made, I think, have to give you some, you know, some excitement that, you know, he can be something for you. And I think another important point to consider is, who's the other point guard that you can say, you know what, this can be a starting point guard for us, right? Who else is there on this roster that you're like, you know what, this guy has the potential to be a starting point guard? You're going to give every and any chance to Kevin Porter Jr. to win you over, because there's really no player with that much potential at the point guard position for the Rockets right now outside of Kevin Porter Jr.
You mentioned point guard, and there's a point guard on this roster who just isn't playing in John Wall. Do you anticipate him remaining on this team through the life of his contract, or what's the plan with John Wall?
Man, that's the $41 million question. When people asked me before the start of this season, will John Wall get traded? I said, absolutely not. They asked me trade deadline, I said, absolutely not. They asked me next offseason, I still think no. I don't think he gets traded next offseason. I think he actually ends up staying for the rest of the deal. Maybe there's talks for a buyout, but as of right now, Houston's not entertaining that. John is an important part of this team. I know he's been training at home. He hasn't been with the team recently, but you know, you can't, like, if you go around and ask the players and the coaches how much John Wall has helped these young guys, they will tell you this guy's been another coach for them. And obviously, you're not trying to pay somebody $41-something million to be a coach for your team. But that's just the agreement they've come up with. They want to give these young guys more playing time. You have EG still here. You can kind of, you know, potentially move him in the offseason. But in terms of John Wall, I just don't really see him playing another minute for this team. I think it's just ultimately they've come to an agreement. Maybe a move is made. The NBA is so predictable. I couldn't have guessed that James Harden would be in Philly by this trade deadline. And now he's reunited with Daryl Morey. And so who knows? Maybe John Wall can go. There were obviously talks during the trade deadline of the Rockets offering John Wall and the Lakers, that kind of dialogue that existed. But, you know, I don't see anything realistically happening for them to be able to move that contract.
Yeah. I'm just so confused because they don't want to play John Wall because they want to develop the young guys. Yet they trade for Dennis Schroeder, start him, play him big minutes, and then taking away minutes from the young guys. Like, that's not the right answer then. You know, saying that you want to not play him because you want to play the young guys, but then trade for a point guard to play over the young guys. Like, no, that's the wrong answer. Like, that's a lie, apparently, because they're saying one thing and then acting in the opposite way. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I just feel thoroughly confused by the addition of Dennis Schroeder, because it makes, like, everything they've said about John Wall, it makes me just really not believe it.
Yeah, and what's funny is when we spoke with Rafael Stone during the media availability after the trade was done, he talked about how, you know, Dennis can fit in, fits in well with this team, and that he can see him. And it kind of, he didn't say this. This is just my kind of read off of his answers. Like I said, I don't want the aggregators are always fishing around. You know, this is just me trying to kind of get an getting a gauge of what he said. It wouldn't surprise me if he fits well with this team. They could make an offer. I think a good comparison for Dennis Schroeder in terms of his fit with this Rockets team is what Kelly Olynyk was for this Rockets team last trade deadline. You bring in Kelly Olynyk, he played a lot of minutes for you, and he actually fit in really well with this young team. A lot of these young guys, when they played against Detroit twice this season, they all went up to Kelly. They all stood around, talked to him. Kelly had a really big impact on the culture of this team. I think Dennis, the way he's playing right now and trying to, it's not about him scoring or doing anything. It's more about him setting the tone in terms of getting the rookies into the right actions. And yes, you could do that with John Wall. I completely agree with you. I mean, I think ultimately if that's the case, then you should be playing John Wall, right? But ultimately, if he's not playing, you need to have somebody else besides Eric Gordon out there who can kind of help you kind of get the offense into a rhythm. KPJ is great in that, but I think ultimately, especially for that second unit, just setting things down. Where the Rockets struggle, especially this season, is when their second unit comes into games and is not organized offensively. Yes, I can give the ball to Şengün and have him operate at the top of the key and run split actions with other guys on the perimeter. But ultimately, teams switch that up, and then Şengün is kind of waiting to see who's going to come around the dribble handoff and shoot a shot or kind of come off the screen. It's good to have a point guard just kind of settle things down and get into the offense. I think that these last two games in particular against Phoenix and against the Clippers, it gives you some insight about, you know what, let's slow it down, let's stay patient. You know, obviously you want to push the pace, but we have to be able to get organized and get set so we can attack some of the defenses that the opposing teams are throwing.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Well, Alicante, thank you so much for answering our questions, but it's now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, our weekly game show where Andrew goes head-to-head against a beat writer. This week, it's Alicante Bajani. Alicante, how this works, I have come up with 8 questions about the Houston Rockets. Some of them are easy, some of them are hard. You're going to give me a number between 1 and 8 that will correspond to a question. If you get it right, you'll get 2 points or more, as you'll find out. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1. So, to start us off, just give me a number between 1 and 8. Question number 3. There have been 24 three-man lineups in Houston this season that have played at least 200 minutes together. Only 3 of those lineups do not have a negative net rating, and only 1 Rocket appears in all 3 of those positive lineups. Actually, one of them is 0.0. But all 3 of those not negative lineups. Can you name that Rocket? So this is 1 Rocket. It's one of the players. He's in 3 of the positive or at least not negative 3-man lineups.
If it's based off matching the eye test, I got to say Jayshon Tate.
It is not based on the eye test. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
Oh, boy. Garrison Matthews?
Garrison Matthews. Great guess. Wrong. It was Kevin Porter Jr. KPJ.
Interesting.
There's some positive news.
Pick. That's actually a really good pick. Like
all right, Andrew, it is your turn.
Number 1.
All right, Andrew. If the Rockets fail to win 6 more games this season, it will be the first time in franchise history that Houston will have won 20 or fewer games in back-to-back seasons. I'm giving you a 5-year window on either side. When was the last time the Rockets won fewer than 20 games prior to the 2020-21 season? I'm giving you a 5-year window on either side. You just have to tell me a year. If you're within 5 years, you will get it right.
The last time they won 20 or fewer?
Yeah. You're just going to have to throw out a year because I know you don't know it.
I'll say 2001 when they got Yao.
Nope. Great guess, but wrong. They won 28 games that year. Ali Khan, do you have any guesses or do you know?
It's the early 80s.
Okay. Do you want to pick a year? If you get it exactly right, I will give you an extra
80, point. 82, 83.
Oh my gosh, that was absolutely correct. 82-83. They
Whoa.
Won 14 games. I'm giving you 2 points for that because that was amazing. I was not expecting you to get that exact.
Don't ask me how I know that.
Okay, Alicante, you now have a 2-point lead, and it's back to you.
Okay. Ooh, let's go with 4.
All right, question number
Former
4.
Former Daniel House Jr. number.
Alperen Şengün leads the Rockets in free throw attempt rate, getting to the line on 51.6% of his field goal attempts. Who is second on the Rockets in free throw attempt rate, getting to the line on 41.4% of his field goal attempts?
You're saying who gets to the line more in their possessions? Is that what you're saying? Just making sure I understood the question.
Yeah, so Şengün, half of his field goal attempts end in him getting to the line. This player, 40% of their field goal attempts end up with them getting to the line. And that is the second best on the team.
Man, you know, this is tough because this is really tough. I have 2 guys in mind for this one.
2 guys. Oh, can choose one.
I'm gonna go with the unlikely one, but just because, let's see, Garrison Matthews.
Alicante, that is absolutely correct. Garrison Matthews is second on the Rockets in free throw attempt rate. He only, I could not believe this.
What?
He only takes 7.9 field goal attempts per game, but he's taking 3.2 free throw attempts per game.
You know why?
Kind of wild.
You know why? Let me tell you why. Because he has a funky shot. On his three point shot, when he comes off the dribble handoffs and he's kind of like aligning himself, kind of squaring his shoulders, aligning himself towards the basket, he always has this funky leg release where he kind of sways his legs, and it always draws a foul at least once a game.
Yes, I remember, because there was some controversy on Twitter, people saying, oh, and he was saying, that's just how I shoot. You can't be
Our
mad at me
Our friend John
that.
Hollinger got Garrison Matthews angry.
Yes.
Garrison had to talk about it during practice one day. Yeah.
Okay, Andrew, you're now down by 4. Oh, early deficit. No. Can you come back?
This is bad. 2.
Question number 2. Christian Wood appears to finally have found a home in the NBA with the Rockets, playing his second consecutive season with the same team for the first time in his career.
Wow.
Wood has played for 5 other NBA franchises. How many can you name? Now, you only get a max of 3 points on this. How many other teams you have to just name? There's 5 other ones that Christian Wood has played for. Just give me 3 if you can.
Philly.
Philly is one. Correct.
Detroit.
Detroit is another one. Those are the 2 easy ones. Can you get a third?
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee is another one. Now, Alikhan, you get a chance to get the other 2 if you know them.
Wait.
What do you mean, well, wait,
I
Andrew?
I do know them. I do wait, know them, but like, is it fair? I do know them.
Well, I couldn't have a question where you got 5 points. So I said max 3.
Why not?
Yeah, max 3, and the other person has a chance to get the 2 if they know it.
All right.
That is, right. I do not agree with Charlotte and New Orleans style of questioning. Okay. You should let me say them, and then he can't get the 2.
No, quiet, Andrew. Quiet. Okay, Alikhan, what are the other 2?
Oh, yeah, Charlotte and New Orleans.
Wow, that is great. And you now have a commanding 6-3 lead. And the board is yours.
That doesn't make any sense, Al.
Andrew, if Alikhan had picked that question, you would have gotten the same opportunity. You're the idiot for choosing that question. I'm sorry.
All right, okay. Let's do crazy eights.
Okay. This is a brand new trivia question. I've never done this format. Do not tell me the answer yet. Okay. I'm going to read the question. Don't tell me because there's rules. The question is, how many 3-pointers did Yao Ming make in his career? Now, before you answer, you get to choose. Do you want to guess first or second? So if you choose guess first, you get to tell me the number, and then Andrew gets to guess second, and then we reveal the winner. Or you can have Andrew guess first, and then you guess second. It's up to you.
No, I'll guess first. That's fine.
Okay, and what is your guess?
5.
5 career 3-pointers for Yao Ming. Andrew, what is your guess?
3.
And the correct answer? 2. Andrew gets the point. All right. Andrew, back to you.
2.
He had his,
oh my gosh.
Wait.
5.
Yes.
Number 5.
Number 5. Here we go. Number 5. When Josh Christopher signed with Arizona State to play college basketball, it was considered one of the biggest recruiting upsets for a top 10 recruit. According to the experts at 247sports.com, 91% had expected him to sign with this Big Ten school. Do you know, Andrew? I've narrowed it down to big. Do you know how many teams are in the Big Ten?
10.
Nope. It's a negative 1.
I don't know.
Point. There's 14. I had to look it up. So I've narrowed it down to 14 teams. 91% expected him to go to this Big Ten school, Josh Christopher. He spurned them, going to Arizona State instead. Can you think of a Big Ten school?
I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Well, you just guess. It's a Big Ten school. Just pick a Big Ten school.
I don't have one, Al.
You can't think of one Big Ten school. Big Ten.
I give up, Al.
All right. Alikhan, do you know what this is?
Michigan.
Yes, it is Michigan. Go Big Blue. Andrew, you just had to give me a big... I feel like you are purposely not answering the questions because you're pissed about the earlier question. Is that what
I'm
this is?
Are you pissed about it?
Are you
I'm
protesting
right now?
You're tanking.
In the spirit of the Rockets, I'm tanking.
Wow. Okay, Alikhan, you could pull out a dominating victory. You have 2 questions left, 6 or 7.
6.
Question number 6. Rank these 3 Houston vets from most playoff games played to fewest playoff games played. And those vets are John Wall, Eric Gordon, Dennis Schroeder. So put them in order from most playoff games to fewest playoff games. John Wall, Eric Gordon, Dennis Schroeder.
John, Eric, Dennis.
That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
Eric, Dennis, John.
That is correct. This kind of surprised me. Eric Gordon, 55 games. Makes sense. Dennis Schroeder, 52 games. John Wall, only 37 playoff games. Which I guess, you know, he was injured.
Playing
but
in Eastern Conference, I thought he played more.
Yeah, in my head, he played more. All right, Andrew, this is going to blow your mind. But this last question is potentially worth 4 points. You are now down by 3 points. You could win if you named all four of what I'm about to ask.
All right.
Kevin Porter Jr. had a 50-point game last April, making him one of only 14 players in the league to have a 50-point game in the last two seasons. Of those 14, only four players have had multiple 50-point games in the last two seasons. How many can you name? So this is last season and this season. These guys have had at least two 50-point games. There's four of them. If you got all four, you would win the week, Andrew.
Donovan Mitchell?
No, you can't get one. Ali Khan, would you like to take a guess at this? You've already won, but you can make it hurt oh so worse for Andrew.
Jason Tatum.
Oh, Jason Tatum, that is correct.
I don't know if this is correct or not, but he just had one. Luka.
Luka surprisingly was not. The other answers, Stephen Curry, Joel Embiid, and Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal.
Ali Khan, you have won 9-5. A dominant victory.
Man, I don't know how many people have scored 9 points. That was quite impressive. Ali Khan, thank you so much for joining the show. Go follow Ali Khan on Twitter at Rockets_insider. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate you letting me come on and talk.
All right, Andrew, it's time once again to spin the wheel of fandom. After last week, hope we get a better team. You know, no offense. Like we said, we enjoyed the Phoenix game, but I just watched that Sixers-Milwaukee game and be like, oh, that would have been nice to talk about. Okay.
You mean you don't want to watch another Clippers-Rockets game?
I don't. So let's see, though. Maybe the wheel fandom will treat us better this week, or maybe it won't. Let's spin the wheel. Our team for next week on Wheel of Fandom will be the Denver Nuggets. Okay.
Baby, yes. I love watching Nikola Jokic. This is the king of the fourth quarter. I mean, this is great. He's making his MVP push. This is a good time to get Nikola Jokic.
Are there any Nuggets? I mean, I know Jokic is in the All-Star game, but are there any other Nuggets? Did Bones Highland? I think Bones Highland was a substitute. He got in with the Rising Stars.
Bones Highland is in the Rising Stars.
Okay, that's something.
Yep. Austin Rivers didn't make the All-Star team this year, which is just a shame.
Snubbed.
that's about it. It's a skeleton crew over there for the Nuggets and Jokic. So hopefully they play. Do they play a game before we have another show?
Yeah, I really hope so. If that's not the case. Okay, they might. If they do, they would have to play on Thursday, the 24th.
Thursday.
They don't. Oh, yes, they do. They play the Kings. Great. Love it.
There we go. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I'm going to read 3 reviews because we got some from this week. Our first one comes from at K-187 in the United States. 5 stars. While I don't make flapjacks, I pay someone to work on my yard. I do sip coffee while listening to Saturday Slam and Jam. Alex and Andrew have great chemistry and effectively walk the tightrope over the vast canyon of NBA nerddom while not taking the whole thing too seriously. Keep up the great work, all. Your number one fan in Kentucky, K-187. Thank you so much for that review. This next one comes from at Chris JD in Australia. 5 stars. Andrew and Alex are my favorite pairing in any podcast genre. The NBA is always interesting, but they don't settle for just talking through the headlines and covering the same topics all NBA pods hit each week. They always bring their creative A games. So much talent. Thank you so much for that. And our last one comes from at LMR in the United States of America. He says, FNA, great pod. Love the pod. Big fans of the banter and obvious chemistry these guys have. A bevy of fun and insightful guests and good hoop talk. Takes me right back to choking Gertie Lopper Clopper on the country sporty. Thanks again, Dash L. Don't understand half of that, but thank you so much for leaving 5 stars. Leave a 5-star review and we will read it on the podcast. Mention our podcast and we will read it. So thank you so much for listening. Hope you guys enjoy All-Star Weekend, and we will talk to you guys again next week.